Christian, mother, wife,
Air Force veteran,
gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
Welcome back to Stacy on the Right. Find out more about me at stacyontheright.com. I'm Stacy Washington, and it's my pleasure to be with you this evening. As always, welcoming in the very best guests. And we have been relying heavily upon the Genza report that has been a daily briefing and update straight from those who are there on the ground in Israel, in the Middle East. And we have used that data to inform and to keep ourselves outside of the misinformation and disinformation channels. And so it's my pleasure to welcome Michael Makovsky, President and CEO of Genza, at Michael Makovsky on Twitter. Thank you, sir, for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We have had
nice words about our report.
Oh, it has been such a lifesaver because I've seen conflicting things over the course of the day as I'm preparing for the show each night. I'll see literally dueling headlines or things that are reported where I'm like, well, both of these things can't be true. And when I discovered Genza.org and I saw the report, I scanned down. I'm like, this is straight from from the ground. And I was able to kind of find my way through to the truth that I can share with, because one thing I don't want is I don't want to spread things that aren't true here, especially about a war that's going on that has all of us really, we're riveted. Our hearts are torn for the people of Israel, and we're having a difficult time making our way through what's happening here in America. So your work there has been outstanding, and we're just grateful. We really are.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you're joining us tonight, among other things to discuss, the more than 100 retired U.S. generals who signed an open letter from the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, that's your organization, calling on President Biden and Congress to give Israel the support it needs militarily, diplomatically, and logistically, and with intelligence for as long as needed. So talk to us about what is needed and what the prospects are with President Biden.
Okay, so first of all, I think I should say that I think President Biden has done a better than expected job. I think he's done a very good job, commendable job of standing by Israel initially. And, you know, the weapons have been, there have been a lot of ammunition and weapons that have been sent to Israel. I'll mention a few things that I think they still need. But, you know, there have been a quick supply and a good rhetorical support, and him visiting Israel was also, I think, very positive. I think we're hitting a pivot point, though, which I'll address here. I don't think he's doing well, but I think, you know, pretty much the first 2 weeks has been very positive. And on the weapons, as I said, I think the administration has been, as far as I understand, have been very good about supplying Israel. I think they still need certain weapons like precision-guided munitions. This is something my organization, Genza, has been calling for years, and we've been calling for the U.S. to preposition weapons, these kind of weapons, in Israel. But anyway, they needed a lot before this war, and they're going to need a lot more now because of that. So I think precision-guided munitions is, so Israel could, airplanes could attack more precisely with less collateral damage or minimal collateral damage. I think precise targets, I think, is going to be important. They need a lot. I think another thing, which is maybe, which actually is something Genza has also called for about 5 years, but is even more urgent now, and that is KC-46 air refueling tankers. I think that, and this is a good segue to the next part, Israel has these older 707s that they've retrofitted, but I think for longer distance bombing raids, they need a couple of these air refueling tankers. So they were actually approved a couple of years ago, but Israel has been wanting to get some expedited, at least a couple delivered. And I think that's important for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's a very important show of support for Israel, and I think it's also an important signal to the Iranians. Because what Israel would do with these is most what they would most likely need them is to attack Iranian targets. Now, at some point, I believe Israel's going to feel compelled to attack Iranian nuclear facilities. I don't know if that's sooner rather than later now. But I think given that Iran was behind a lot of these bombings, these barbaric attacks, I think that they're going to have to punish the Iranians. And I think the air refueling tankers could be helpful for that, as well as a very strong, important signal of U.S. support. So I think we have a lot of these. We produce about two a month. I can't remember exactly how many. We have over 80 of these, but I think we could either lease them or park some in Israel that they could use if they need them. I think that would be very useful. Now, I could pivot to what Biden needs to do, but I've already talked a bit, so let me know if you'd like me to address what I think Biden needs to do beyond the weapons.
So there is a bit of a disconnect, and I understand very clearly what you've explained, but there's a bit of a disconnect because there are all of these media individuals. So these are, you know, obviously very powerful individuals in media in the United States, and then their cohorts on college campuses and the protest apparatus that the Democrats stood up way back in Occupy Wall Street, and it still exists to this day, where they can literally overnight produce pre-made signs and, you know, a couple hundred thousand people across the country protesting. And what these people are asking for is they want humanitarian funds. I'm using one quote fingers here, Michael. They want humanitarian funds from the U.S. to go to Gaza, which, as I understand it, reading all across all sources, it is widely and commonly known and accepted that money that goes into Gaza to help, you know, for water or for food, those monies, those fuels, everything of that is repurposed and used for terrorism to fund rockets and bombs and all kinds of things that all go in the direction of attacking Israel. So how important is it for people to understand how short-sighted it would be for America to fund both sides of the Israel-Hamas war by sending aid to Hamas in the form of aid to Palestinians?
Yeah, I think actually we should ask I think it's a good point. And obviously there's been, as you point out, on some of these college campuses, it's been outright offensive. I mean, imagine Hamas commits these unbelievable atrocities on innocent Israelis. And you have immediately these demonstrations supporting Hamas effectively. And talking about, you know, free Palestine from the Jordan to the sea, which means wipe out Israel. It's unbelievable, really. You know, it's like after Nazi attacks on Jews, and this was the biggest attack on Jews since the Holocaust, you have pro-Nazi demonstrations, you know, make, you know, sympathetic to the Nazis and so on. It's unbelievable. We've seen this on college campuses. Unfortunately, we see it in other outside of campuses. In American cities, I'm in Washington, there have been them here. They've been in Chicago, in New York, in Berlin, in London. There's, I think, 100,000 people supposedly demonstrating in London the other day, I think over the weekend, in support of Hamas. It's unbelievable. I haven't seen one Palestinian demonstration criticizing Hamas, which, you know, so on the issue of the aid, look, I feel bad for the Palestinian people in Gaza. A lot of them were just caught in the middle of this. You know, Hamas is terrible to them also. My suggestion is actually, if there's going to be humanitarian aid, let the Qataris pay for it. They're the ones that are supporting Hamas. They're the chief, among the chief funders of Hamas, and the Iranians are. So I don't see why the United States should have to do it. I would be, the Qataris have a lot of money. I think they bear a lot of responsibility for this atrocity. I think we should be pressing the Qataris both on humanitarian aid, if anything, let them pay for it, and also on the hostages. And I'd also be putting pressure on the Iranians. But I think the United States, you know, again, I'm sympathetic to the Iranian, the Palestinian people that are caught in this. But I think let the financiers of Hamas pay for humanitarian aid if anything needs to go through. And obviously, anything goes through needs to be carefully inspected for the reasons that you suggested, because we've known Hamas diverts a good chunk of whatever they get to terrorist activities.
They do. And so speaking of the humanitarian aid, We've seen the leader of Egypt come out and say, you know, we will receive not one Palestinian.
Right.
And so I understand why he wouldn't want to receive military age fighting males or women, right? Because sometimes Hamas uses women to carry out attacks in Israel. But what about the children? If over 50% of the population of Gaza is children, why can't they take, you know, children under the age of five or, you know, elderly people over the age of 80? Why can't Egypt or any of the other surrounding nations take anyone? They can't take any of the people from there, even the ones who are clearly harmless, yeah, like the small children. Why can't they do that?
Good question. Again, I would turn to the Qataris. I would turn to the Turks. The major backers of Hamas in the region are the Turks and the Qataris. You know, President Erdogan of Turkey has unleashed a number of really offensive statements, both against Israel and the United States since this war began. Because for him, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is what Hamas is, they're like his own brothers. He's Muslim Brotherhood. He's the Turkish version. He's the Palestinian version. So I suggest that let the Turks and the Qataris take care of these people if they feel so bad. I understand that it would seem to make sense that Egypt house them. I guess their fear is that once you house them, they're not leaving. It becomes a source of problems for the country. He looks at the Muslim Brotherhood as like his enemy. They already have issues in the Sinai over the years with ISIS, although those are generally Bedouin folks who have become ISIS. I could understand he's got already a tough domestic situation, but my first choice would be ask the Turks and the Qataris to house these people if they care so much. And they're really part of the source of the problem. Hamas is the problem. They're the cancer. They're the ones that inflicted this barbarity on Israel. They're the ones that are oppressing the Palestinian people, their people in Gaza. They are being funded by Qatar. They're being supported by Turkey. They're being funded and organized by the Iranians. Let them take care of it, I think. Again, I feel bad for the people. I really do. I really feel sorry for them. But I think because Hamas is this problem, let the backers of Hamas take responsibility.
Yeah, it would be such a strong statement of a higher moral compass for the Qatari government, since they have negotiated the release of some of the hostages, to also require from Hamas that they, you know, that they release all of the hostages, or that they, the leader of Hamas, who lives in a fancy 5-star hotel in Qatar, that they just have him, right, turn him over to the Israelis, and then they would trade the leader of Hamas for all of the, you know, I mean, if they really cared, if they really had any skin in the game as far as trying to get the children, the babies, back to their mothers, you know, it's an unbelievably difficult situation. Yeah. So back to, as we close out here, and we're so grateful for your time tonight on the show to discuss these important issues and help us understand what is going on there in Israel and with the war. As we're looking at the future, and I've read quite a few things about the difficulty of urban warfare and the ground assault that Israel will have to mount in order to truly rout out Hamas, there's been a lot of criticism from here, really everywhere, about the inadvertent deaths of Palestinian children and women, and the numbers that Hamas continually puts out, which we have no way of verifying. We're not even sure if they're true. I mean, they are terrorists. They're prone to lying. But there's a PR component to this that cannot be ignored, and Hamas has played it to their advantage. Even though they're the aggressors, the rapists, the terrorists, the murderers, they're playing it to their advantage. What do you expect to see on Israel's part in the way of the ground assault? Do you think it will be lengthy? Do you have anything that you know about that you can share?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I'm concerned about it because I don't think it will be short. It will be longer than Israel would like, you would imagine. They're going to want to create some sort of buffer zone in Gaza to protect in between any population centers in Gaza and Israeli towns, which have been massacred by Hamas. It's a very small, dense environment. As you point out, urban warfare is very dangerous, so there'll be a lot of Israeli military casualties. I worry about it a lot, actually, and I think Israel historically doesn't want to take over. So the question is, what could they do with air power and special forces? And then what are they going? Maybe they don't need. Maybe they'll go in with fewer troops than we are led to believe. That's possible. I don't know. Because Israel knows that, you know, they don't want to get bogged down for a couple of reasons. One is they want to minimize more casualties on their side, and also they realize that strategically, as bad as Hamas is, and they got to teach Hamas a lesson, they got to destroy Hamas, Israel needs to regain deterrence. And their biggest enemy is Iran. By the way, it's also America's biggest enemy in the region. The Iranians are attacking U.S. forces. Their Iranian proxies are attacking us. We don't do anything. They've attacked under the Biden administration. They've attacked our forces in Iraq and Syria over 90 times, and we've retaliated 4. I saw Secretary Blinken said, oh, we'll respond swiftly if they attack the Brazil, but they're doing it all the time, and we're doing nothing. So I think that both for the United States and for Israel, we need to restore our deterrent in the region, and that will help minimize the breadth and the depth, I think, of this conflict. And the Israelis obviously need to do that, which is why they don't want to get too bogged down in the south, because they know strategically the bigger problem is still Hezbollah, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Iranians, pretty much. It's a proxy. They have a lot more rockets. They have about 130,000 rockets and missiles in Lebanon pointed at Israel. Some of these are precision guided. They're very dangerous. Israel Iron Dome cannot handle all those. There'll be a lot of damage to Israel if there was a war with Hezbollah. And the Iranians are developing nuclear weapons, and they're getting very close to having the bomb, and Israel can't allow that to happen. So they know that strategically, Hezbollah in Lebanon, which is in the north of Israel, Iran, which is also northeast of Israel, those are the bigger problems, and that's why they have to do what they need to do in Gaza, and then they got to pivot and deal with the north. And the United States, by the way, needs to do the same, and we need to, frankly, show some backbone, because this is where the Biden administration has really been, I think, really lousy. We've been accommodating the Iranians. We're doing new deals with the Iranians. We're enriching this awful regime, which is oppressing its people. We're allowing them to attack our forces in the region. They plot against U.S. citizens and American soil. We do virtually nothing. The Iranians aren't afraid of us. So I think it's important for both Israel and the United States to restore the turn to with Iran.
Well, I agree with you. And the points that you're making here, I hope our listeners will take these with you. You have to talk to your friends and family about this, calmly present the facts as they are about the imperative that we have to help Israel, and really the lack of imperative on the Ukraine. It's not hypocritical, it's logical, and you have to just carefully explain that and share it and begin to turn the tide here on the ground, household by household, friend by friend, with the truth. I'm so grateful for your time. I hope we can speak to you again, and certainly please continue the great work. Jinza.org. It's such a great site. I recommend it to everyone. Jinza.org. Thank you for joining me on the show tonight, Michael Makowski.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wonderful evening. Sure. Bye. And we'll be back with more Stacey on the Right after this.